It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket Weekly podcast, going daily for the T20 World Cup. Another day of drama, with South Africa edging out India, Pakistan finally getting on the board, and Bangladesh winning twice against Zimbabwe. Here to talk you through all of it are Wisden's Dan Senior and Wisden India editor Adya Sharma. Hello to you both. Let's start with the final game of the day between India and South Africa. This was a good game, a close game with India taking it to the final over. But really, it was kind of decided in the first 10 overs when Lungi Ngidi took four wickets. Dan, why is Ngidi so good? He's not absolutely express pace. Doesn't seem like he has loads of variations. It's not like with Hazelwood where he's sort of hitting that sixpence every single ball. It's not like he's doing absolutely loads with the ball in the air off the pitch, and yet he always seems to take wickets. What is it that makes him good?
Yeah, I asked this question earlier and I'm still not even sure. Nothing he does is, it seems spectacular, but he's just consistently brilliant in this format. What did he have today? 4 for 29. Mm-hmm. I think he gets a lot of joy from changing up his length. He's quite clever there. We've seen that be effective on a number of occasions, especially on that Perth pitch. But if he started to delve into why he's got a strike rate of less than 12, like why he takes a wicket quicker than every two overs, I couldn't begin to tell you, because there must be something hidden within his skills that, I can't pick out. He's a better bowler than I'm able to analyse.
Yeah, I guess, there might be something in actually that he is just very good at identifying the right line of attack for each game, I guess, because it was the short ball today with the big boundary, with how pacey it was, and he really honed in on that and was just doing that time and again, I guess. It was also a game that was odd because it was the first 10 and the last 10 where South Africa was so good. And in that second half, South Africa just came out and attacked, having been, 40 for 3 at the halfway stage or something? David Miller was key to that. He's very good, isn't he, Adya?
Yeah. There was a point in the middle when we thought that, David, we've lost the person that we know David Miller as, the kind of batsman that we think he is. But he's had a tremendous 2022. He's been so good. He's averaging, I think, 250 plus in successful chases this year. So it's just brilliant to see, because I think what has changed for him now is how he approaches spinners. I think that was something missing in the middle when he had become a bit inconsistent. There's more clarity to his thought, and you could see it in how he attacked at the right time, Ashwin, and closed the game for South Africa.
Dan, are South Africa the best team in the tournament, and are they favourites now, would you say? Are they the only unbeaten team left? I think they might be, apart from New Zealand. How good are they, do you think?
How good are they? Short answer, very good. Long answer, very good. I think they've probably got the best pace attack in the comp. And like with Ngidi today, with that length variation, I think it suited them playing India at Perth today. Bouncing people out, we saw a lot of people caught in the deep, as we have in other games there. That attack's got a mix of raw pace with the likes of Norkeer, but then it's got clever change-ups and variations. Wayne Parnell's someone, I think, who's really interesting the way he's come back into the team. Adds a different dynamic to them. They don't often produce much rubbish. They're always a gun field inside. That was one of the key differences today we saw with Rabada's catch to get rid of Kohli. That's just a massive moment in the game to break open India's top order. They've got that explosive batting lineup. They show today they can adapt as well, even though they lost to Cork, Bavuma and Rousseau, who He's got, three ducks and a ton against India. So he goes big or goes home. But they stuck in there and then exploded at the end when they needed to. So, yeah, short answer, very good. Long answer, very good. And I think probably favourites to finish top of Group 2 now. And you know what? I fancy them to beat whoever finishes second in the first group as well, I think.
Yeah, you mentioned South Africa's excellent fielding. We should talk about India's fielding as well, I guess, and that Kohli drop in particular, because it was remarkable. Sort of. I mean, it just when that goes up and you see it's Kohli settling underneath it, and then it's just, I don't understand how it's bounced out, basically. And then also, there was almost a moment for me where I was like, hang on, that can't be Kohli's drop that. And yet it was Kohli drop that. And then I was thinking, actually, does he drop more catches than you think? And is he one of those fielders who we've been told is a brilliant fielder and who does brilliant things, like he did that brilliant catch in the warm-up game, didn't he, against Australia? But he is actually quite fallible, almost like Ben Stokes in terms of being capable of the spectacular, but also maybe there's the odd sort of calamity in there as well, I guess.
Yeah, perhaps. With those sort of players, I think the scrutiny is always on, isn't it? So you notice their blunders more than you might notice other people. That catch, like you say, it was a dolly for someone of his standard or for any professional cricketer. It was just like you say, the narrative, the ball went up, it's Kohli out there, it's got to be gone, to drop it once and then drop it twice as he fell over, it was like barely believable. And if you'd taken that, then you've got to think they've got a way better chance because Miller hadn't even started at that point. But I think it's important to mention that India is like a collective, weren't at the best today. I think that what misrun out from Rohit was fairly simple, and there's a couple of other sloppy bits of fielding. But if you want a definitive answer on Kohli, on the basis of the last few games, I guess you'd say he's not a great fielder. Drop catches and a run out or two, but I actually still think he is.
Fair enough. Very, very diplomatic of you. There were a couple of bright points for India in what was a sort of disappointing day. Arshdeep Singh was brilliant with the new ball again, and Surya Yadav remains incredible with the bat. Adia, are we at the point where those two are kind of India's two most important players?
Yeah, you can say that actually, because with Arshdeep, we're obviously unsure how much, because you've obviously seen how good Arshdeep has been in the IPL over the last 2-3 seasons, but to fill a Bumrah-sized gap in the bowling attack is obviously a big deal for anyone, but Arshdeep has done that. And he was initially, you know, he was taken into the team as someone who can bowl well in the death, but he's done so well with the new ball. So that's really nice to see. Like, you've got a bowler who can sort of be valuable at the start and at the end also. And that is obviously valuable for India at any point. So, you know, Arshdeep is, you know, full marks to him. He's done his bit and he continues to do well again and again. And the same goes with Surya also. You rightly said he is probably the first name that, you know, maybe after Rohit, who gets into the team. And he's someone who sort of has the knack to play the game at a different level compared to what the others are playing. You don't need to see the pitch. You don't need to see the bowling attack, because that was right there. A pacey pitch, a great bowling attack, but he was still able to find his way of playing and, you know, excel in that. And to see India's top order crumble the way it did, and, you know, for Surya to rise the way he did, it was very good to see. So, yeah, those two are definitely the top two right now for India.
In terms of what India can change, I mean, it's not a case, you know, ripping up the script. They're still a very good team. But there was quite a bit of discussion that I saw about Rishabh Pant and whether he should come into the 11 for the next game. It looks like India might not have a choice in the matter because Dinesh Kartik went off injured. But yeah. Adia, what could Pant bring to the team? And if it were to be that Kartik was fit, which way would you go in terms of that selection decision?
So, I'm personally not in favor of making, in-tournament changes based on form. Tactical, I can understand. You've backed KL Rahul to be your opener and, you know, you should stick to that. But then he's sort of become like a walking wicket at this point. You can see that he's just not able to put any impact at the start. And that's having sort of a cascading effect because, you know, Rohit Sharma has to play in a way that he doesn't usually play. Rohit generally takes his time and, you know, builds in innings before he explodes. But now Rohit has to play in a very unnatural way. He's trying to go for shots instead of, you know, timing them as he does. So in that sense, if Pant comes in, Pant gets a bit of, you know, he's sort of a free-flowing batsman. And it's not an outlandish thought also, because you've tried Pant, you know, you've tried Pant recently as an opener for India. So it's not an outlandish thought. The second thing that can happen is probably having Pant in the middle, somewhere at 4-5, five probably, obviously, and you know, having him as a floater because he can attack the spinners. So that's an option as well. But it doesn't seem very likely if Dinesh Karthik is fit, because Rohit doesn't seem to be the kind who would make such drastic changes.
I guess India might think as well, they've got what, Bangladesh next and Zimbabwe next. And with respect to those teams who we will talk about, talk about them now, but they might think that Carroll Hall might be able to get some form against those, or they can just delay that decision if he's out of form. They have a replacement, I guess. On to Zimbabwe, Bangladesh. Bangladesh won by 3 runs. This was a good, if perhaps low quality game, that's fair to say. But Dan, this was a real blow to Zimbabwe, who, if they had won, would have still had a decent shot at the semi-finals. Not that they're out of it now, but it does obviously hurt their chances.
Yeah, after the game the other day, I think it was Abhishek who said it on the podcast when I was editing it. He said, Zimbabwe have actually got a good chance at the semis. And at first I thought, no, they haven't. And then I looked at it and I thought, oh, that actually they have. Like, they're really well placed. So when I woke up today and I saw they'd lost, it was a massive shame. They'd have been eyeing that game up against Bangladesh, who, with no disrespect, they'd have been fancying a win against what you would call quite a weak side. They've won, what, 3 of the last 20-odd games against Fulham Nations. Obviously, I didn't watch much at all because it was on in the middle of the night, but looking at the scorecard, Musa Rabani only bowled 2 overs, which seemed slightly bizarre. There might have been a reason for that, I don't know, but it seemed strange looking at the card. Raza had a bit of an off day. You know, no runs of the bat, 1 for with the ball. He's been the star man, so every time he's performed, generally they've come good. But I think, obviously, the main moment was that Williams run out by Shakib, which was brilliant. Unbelievable piece of field, and that was the obvious turning point. He was going really well, building something nice with Ryan Burl. And I wasn't awake for all the drama. I missed that, unfortunately. It's one of those where you feel like you've properly missed out. You want to be online for it. But I think they'll be annoyed that it even got to that stage, never mind losing. It'll be a game they definitely, in the form they're in, they think they should have won.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that last ever drama then. Adya, take us through it. It's been a T20 World Cup that's really sort of tested the umpires and those who are supposed to know what the laws are. And to be fair, they've basically come out every time, haven't they?
Yeah, it was actually madness. I mean, props to Marais Erasmus and Nitin Menon for staying back and sort of checking the thing again, because the players had just gone out of the field. You know, they were on the boundary ropes. All of them were just shaking hands. And then for them to come back for the last ball. And before that also, the over, and I think the previous over also, that very freakish run out by Shakib Al Hasan, given the context of the game and, you know, where they were, it was a very crucial direct hit. But sort of weird also, you don't really see two spinners bowling the last 2 overs. I think Shakib miscalculated there. But then Mossadegh Hussain sort of managed to hold things on. I think Ngarwa lost himself in the moment there after hitting the 6. And, you know, he stepped out and got stumped. And again, I think Nurul Hasan also, messed up a bit by doing that thing with the gloves coming ahead of the stumps. All in all, it was madness. Never seen something like that. For the players to come back, you know, there's this image of Erasmus just standing there alone on the pitch with a no-ball signal and just asking everyone to come back. You guys come back, let's play some more cricket. So yeah, that was mad.
Yeah, he's a cool customer. So what? So it was the lot. So it was 5 needed to win. Bangladesh think they've won it because Narasan whips off the bails. They all walk off the field. Seems like game over. Then they review it. Find that it's also just a weird no ball as well. It's not something you see very often at all. With the gloves in front of the stumps before the balls reach them, and so that's why it's a no ball. And so then is it 3 or no, 3 to tie at that point, or 3 to win? 3 to tie. Then it misses again, and it's a weird, it's somehow an anticlimactic and incredibly dramatic at the same time. And Bangladesh have a little bit of a habit of this, don't they? I mean, there was the Hardik Pandya final over in the 2016 World T20 when they celebrated having got, was it 1-4-4 and needing 2 to win off the last 3 balls?
Yeah, I was there at the ground for that game. I was at the ground, yeah. That was a,
And there was also an ODI against West Indies in 2012 where they were 8 down. They hit the ball towards the boundary, sort of started celebrating, ripped the stumps out of the ground, and then found out the ball hadn't actually reached the boundary. So it was a top ball, and they had to bowl again. And although they did win that one, as they did today. But yeah, a funny team. Anyway, on to Pakistan-Netherlands. this was something of a non-event, I guess, with Netherlands really struggling on a fast wicket against some really quick bowlers. Harris Rao forced Baz to lead to retire Hurt, and Mohammad Wasim bowled some very good Yorkers at the end that were maybe wasted on sort of the Netherlands tail. But in the chase, Pakistan's approach was a bit odd, wasn't it, Dan, with net run rate? Well, they will be dependent on net run rate if they do qualify. And they went about it in an odd sort of way, I guess.
Yeah, I think you saw in their method of chasing, it's a team who were, you know, a little bit all over the place at the moment. They've been hurt twice. They've been stung by close finishes. And just imagine last Sunday now, if they'd have won that game against India, how much better place they'd be in. It'd be India would be scrambling around. I guess the main thing for them is, for the last year, it's been Babar and Rizwan who've been facing all the balls, scoring all the runs. It's just not happened this tournament for those two. That Babar run out was sort of like the icing on the cake. It was objectively quite funny. It was like, you're in this bad run of form and you somehow managed to get yourself run out against Netherlands when you'd be fancying a decent chase. That top four with Fakhar Zaman coming in looks a bit odd now, with Masood down at four, who effectively just got four openers, who made way Haider Ali. Either way, it's basically out of their hands now anyway. But I think they'll have to be much better than that to have any chance of beating South Africa if they're going to keep their hopes alive.
Yeah, you mentioned Babar and Rizwan not quite happening for them. There's a couple of stats which either show that they're not in great form or just emphasise how good they have been, which is, this is the first time ever that Babar has gone three innings without reaching double figures. And it's also the first time that Rizwan as an opener has gone four innings without making a 50. And even today, was up for 49. So only run one away. But yeah, Fakhar Zaman's an interesting one because he's obviously back at number three, having been injured and sort of in and out of the World Cup squad with that injury. But he is the one player in that top four that can provide that little bit of extra impetus. And there was a stat going around after the Zimbabwe game that Babar's record opening with Fakhar is actually quite a lot better than it is opening with Rizwan. How do you see his role on the side, Adrian? And how do you think he played today?
I think he looked generally good. He started off with a couple of boundaries and, you know, it's not easy coming into the tournament midway and, you know, trying to create an impact for your team. That too, when the openers are not doing really well. But as Dan pointed out, the composition now seems like there are four openers and Masood scores at a certain run, at a certain rate, and you need more from Zaman. It's tricky. There's a school of thought that says Zaman should open. With whom is the question? Does Babar drop one and, you know, does he play at three? But then you pointed out that Babar and Fakhar actually have a good, you know, record as an opening pair. But yeah, I think it was good to see him back because it's also important for a batting group to have someone coming in at a time when they have been deflated by two losses. So a new player brings in some fresh perspective, and Zaman has done that in the past, you know, by giving some intent in the middle. He got hit in the middle. I think there was a bit of an issue with the knee, but I think he's fine now. So hopefully, you know, but then again, as Dan says, it's sort of out of their hands, but they need to figure out that because four openers with all four of them, at least three of them, at least not being very high with their run scoring. It's a bit of a problem.
Yeah, let's try and work out what this result means for the groups. Every team has played three games now. As far as I can tell, if South Africa win one out of two, they will be almost certainly through. They'll need what the only scenario would be like, I think, an India Bangladesh washout and those two teams win the other games and then net run rates. That seems quite unlikely. India and Bangladesh might both need to win both their games, but might be able to win just one, but they'd be best if they win both. And Zimbabwe, if they win both, will also quite likely be through unless Bangladesh win both their games, I think. And then on Pakistan, I think they need India to lose to either Bangladesh or Zimbabwe, or they need South Africa to lose to the Netherlands. And if India do lose Zimbabwe, then they also need Zimbabwe to lose to the Netherlands, and they need to win their two games as well, obviously. So it doesn't look great for them, but I guess Pakistan do have a habit of starting world tournaments badly and then pulling it around. So we'll see, I suppose. Anyway, that's enough for today. Thanks, Adia. Thanks, Dan. Join us tomorrow when Ireland take on Australia. Cheers.
Sports Social Podcast Network.